Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Crum?
Here.
Commissioner Kowalski?
Here.
Commissioner Wong?
Here.
Commissioner Thompson?
Here.
Okay. Do introductions.
Chris Brennan, North Star Terminal.
Fred Bissler, Mills Office, the Coast Survey.
Still in favor with Matson?
You can call Abram, represent myself.
Paul Rutgers, Port Safety.
I'm here last Maritime Cruise Line Agency.
Paul Mailer, Maritime Patrol.
Me?
Yep.
Jim Hager, Port of Alaska.
Cheryl Beckham, Port of Alaska.
Sharon Walsh, Port of Alaska.
Steve LaBuffo, Port of Alaska.
Stuart Redars, Port of Alaska.
Thank you, Lou Trading.
Please, no.
You got to Lou Trading.
Hard enough to live with him as it is.
All right, Paul, you want to give us a safety minute?
Sure. Well, good afternoon, happy new year, everyone. Who can afford a buck 87? Who's got a buck 87 on them? Dollar 87.
I think we can do that.
Would you pay a buck 87 to keep seeing and keep your vision the rest of your life?
Seems like a deal.
Here's something. A buck 87 will save your eyesight. That's the cost of these safety glasses at Last Industrial Hardware. Oftentimes, we see people airing up tires of their vehicle, heavy equipment. This week at the port maintenance shop, the big flavor of the week is airing up heavy equipment tires and passenger tire safety. A lot of people stand right in front of the tire and air it up, because the chuck is right there. Well, what happens if that tire blows? And I've seen them blow. I spent my whole high school career in a gas station. It's pretty violent. It really is. And these guys right here will save your eyesight. Just in case if any of you guys didn't know, you know, inside your eyeball is this fluid called vitreous fluid. And if you lose that, you don't get it back. And you don't get your eyesight back. So airing up your tire, throw a pair of these cheap $1.87. Make sure they're safety glasses, not your spectacles that you're reading. They ought to say Z87.1 on there, on the package, on the frame, or on the lens. And just keep in your glove compartment. If you're jump-starting your car, throw them on. If you're airing up your car, just throw them on. You never know when the tire's going to go. So buckle yourself.
Good. $12.99, you get those ditching little lights.
Or the bifocals like I got right here.
That's
yeah,
right.
Steve, that's just thanks, two Paul. Bits more.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Okay.
Thank you.
You too. Okay. Approval of the agenda. We had a request to from Jim there to move new business up for a Department of Energy presentation on alternative energy.
He's not actually online yet, so he should be in a moment now.
Okay, so I guess we can move forward, but
I don't see any Department of Energy
items. No, this is news.
It's an addition.
Yes, okay. Addition two in the new business, and he's on the East Coast, so we're going to capture him while he's still at the office.
Okay. Excuse me. One thing we might want to remind everybody to say their name if, when they're talking for the recording.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's see. So listen. How much time do you need, do you think, Jim?
Should be less than 15 minutes total with questions, I would guess. Probably 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay, so let's move into, let's approve the agenda with
an open slot for it.
With an open slot for the presentation. How about that?
So moved. Second.
Okay, approval of the August 21st, 2019 meeting minutes. So we had a chance to review.
I would move that we approve the August 21st, 2019 meeting minutes.
By Ron, a second?
Second.
Any alterations, additions. So moved.
I had a question about, I mean, we've had meetings since August. Are we behind on minutes, or?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay, all right.
You're in, excuse me.
No problem, I just, thinking, I know I've been in meetings since then.
Yes. Informational items. Sharon?
Okay, on the general report going on, engineering construction-wise, your earthquake recovery, we're continuing repairs to miscellaneous buildings and infrastructure, the maintenance group has been going through and doing the things that are within their capability to do, and then we have some projects we're grouping up to put out to bid next spring. That'll include some repairs to storm drains, a pavement contract to fix a bunch of cracks in the transit yard, and also some busted pavement around the sand shed building where the earthquake pushed up. So we'll make that one contract. We have to, big number might be two new submerged cathodic protection sleds to replace one that broke off during the earthquake and then was failed to extend. And so that's going to, we're putting those invitations to bid together now.
That's that POF too?
Yes. Then there were five originally. One went out right after the quake. We had inspection before and after. And then another one went out sometime during the winter. And we can't really push it out into the quake. So we're hoping to recover the cost of the one. And they're not cheap. So we're probably looking at $250,000 each. But, you know, we're making a commitment to keep those POLs operating as long as it makes sense. So, the 2020 war file and 2021 fender pile enhancements, we're going to proceed as usual, although we've decreased funding to the war pile. We'll probably only be able to do 25 pile jackets this year instead of the 50 we've done in the last few years. And we're working with pre-disaster mitigation folks in FEMA. We finally had a breakthrough meeting with those guys on the phone about what it takes to get the grant actually awarded and begin to proceed. We're doing the design on our own dime, so that's going forward. Permitting on our own dime, that's going forward. But FEMA won't formally award the grant until all the environmental issues have been blessed by the Corps and everybody else. So once we get that permitting and what we've really learned with all these grants, no matter what federal agency you're talking to, each of them has to do their own NEPA, National Environmental Protection Act, evaluation of the project before they're allowed to release money. And even though the port has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in many years now, all the environmental assessments for the PCT and the transitional dredging, and we have all that information about the sound and the belugas and everything else, but we have to repackage it, it seems like, for each group, for each event. So that's the good news is they said, okay, we're finally ready to award you, but we have to do our NEPA thing this year. So we're sending them, we're working that issue. And I'll say the rest of the modernization project update. Oh, one more thing. We have a fence we're finishing up between ourselves and Jay Bear up on track J. That's our active project. So any questions on that?
Abraham, was that you who just signed on?
That is me, Abraham.
Okay, so we have our guest here from. Do you want to introduce him, Jim?
I guess I'll let Abraham from the Department of Energy, and it has to do with. Here, let me turn this up just so that. Get this offline. Sorry. You're still there, Abraham?
I am.
Okay. Can you turn that off?
Yeah, just right there on the side, on the right side.
Right. Okay, so about, 9 months ago, we started looking at some energy resiliency issues in the Port of Alaska and what we can do for backup power. Actually, it was even a little before that. The earthquake was our wake-up call. To remind us how important it is to make sure that we can have port power even if we have a grid failure. So we were looking at some general ideas about what we could do for port resiliency and power resiliency. Started having some conversations with some folks at J-Bear discovered that they also had some resiliency needs. And basically, I'll let Abraham give a little bit of a background on it, but we've been working with DOD and the Department of Energy on potential energy resiliency solutions for Port of Alaska and part of J-Bear. And is that a good kickoff for you?
Yeah, this is Abraham. Thanks, Jim. How long do I have, just to make sure I don't break the meeting here?
About 10 minutes.
How can we get the whole thing wrapped up in 10 to 15 minutes?
We can. Yeah, I'll please stop me, but I have 14 here, so I'll shoot for 10 minutes. How's that?
Okay, and so I have the slide of the first slide of your slide deck is up on the screen right now.
Excellent. Let me just say, thank you, Jim. My name is Abraham Ellis. I work for Sandia National Laboratories, which is one of the DOE National Labs. Some other time when we have more time, we can tell you all about how DOE works with its national labs. Fascinating conversation there. But Jim's right. I am currently on assignment with the Office of Electricity at the Department of Energy. And as part of that assignment, it's been my privilege to work with Jim and the other folks involved in this project to contribute or to guide the contribution of DOE with respect to what the stakeholders are thinking. So let's go to the next slide here about the motivational. These are things that you know and Jim just talked about. But the motivation for this is to recognize that the operation of the port is critical, especially considering the high contribution that it makes to both civilian and also defense-type activities, not just in Anchorage, but also the state and the broader region of the Arctic. On the defense side, there's even some critical things to consider with respect to the whole Pacific region. And so that port, I guess I'll say congratulations, right? It's an important asset that is wide recognized, even on the federal side, that supporting the resilience of the port is extremely important. There's also recognition that there are some unique hazards there, seismic being one, but there's also conditions related to climate and other things, for example, cybersecurity and other things that we'd like to wrap into this. There's also recognition that if there's going to be something done in the area of energy, we might as well think about opportunities to mitigate things like the high cost of electricity now and going forward for the tenants at the port. And the timing also proves to be interesting because both DOD and federal agencies are interested in looking at options for these types of projects all across the nation. And this seems like a good place to contribute and see if we can get something done. Next slide is, again, I talked about this before, but there's a shot of the port with Jay there in the background. Obviously, your neighbor's there, but more importantly than that, you know all the operations that go through that facility on the defense side. What's less apparent to the outside, but I'm sure you're keenly aware of that, is the high degree of contribution that the port has to the economic vitality of the region. And I think we have information on that. We kicked it around here in the Department of Energy. You know, I realize that this port, along with a handful, not very many, of others, are really critical. We should be paying attention to that. And so that doubled our motivation for supporting this kind of activity. Next slide talks about where we've been and how we got to this point, but just to reinforce what Jim said, it's been a sort of an evolving concept, an opportunity identified by folks primarily at the Port of Alaska. There was a conversation back in May last year that involved J-Bear, as mentioned, that basically made the stakeholders realize that this is a shared opportunity and concern. So from there, the Department of Energy offered to help, essentially to provide assistance to help define, you know, next steps. You know, is this something that is feasible? Is it something that has a kind of fatal flaw? What are the benefits? Can we size them up? What are the potential challenges? Can we size those up? And that's where we came in. So we commissioned a study with a local contractor that's familiar with the situation of the electrical system in the region. That's EPS, for those of you that know who that is. And so they have been working since about September or so of last year on a very quick study. This is a very preliminary study to kind of define what it is that we're looking at here and identify some challenges and maybe next steps. So I'll be talking a little bit about that in the next few minutes. Please stop me if you have a key question. Next slide. Talked about how we wanted to run this study. We recognize that the federal side here, the Office of Electricity through Sandia and the EPF contractor were basically delivering this study, but we work closely with the Department of Defense and with the City of Anchorage, primarily Jim and his folks at the port, keep other partners that are in vision that would play a role should something be done going forward. Might be municipal line of power or the utility that's going to end up owning those assets. I haven't kept up, but perhaps that acquisition has already taken place. I'm not sure on the Chugach Electric side. And so anyway, whoever the owner is, they will be a stakeholder, as well as possibly the Alaska Railroad. I'll explain that a little bit later. Next slide is I wanted to make sure that we recognize that we're after something a little bit beyond just supporting the reliability of the system. You can do that by adding another, you know, distribution line, a second feed, you know, diesel gen sets all over the place and things like that. What we really are after here is the concept of supporting a higher resilience, which means that we're interested in coming up with solutions that address some of those low probability but very high consequence threats, like a seismic event that might affect the ability of the utility to function for an extended period of time, or something like that. And so this is not your typical energy system. We want to make sure that it is resilient and supports the operations of the port, not just during blue sky and common outages, but also during some of these more challenging events. In order to do that, we recommend that the best place to do that is to think about an asset that is actually local, that doesn't depend on miles and miles of distribution system, transmission lines and things like that might be compromised during some of these large-scale events, and so that's the idea here. That also goes to say that the design of the system itself needs to consider its physical, cybersecurity, and all of these things, considering this measure threat. So that's what we're after. I'll say in a nutshell here is that this is part of a broader exercise by the Department of Energy to figure out how these kinds of systems can be designed and deployed to solve very similar challenges that are nationwide in nature. And so we're looking for pioneering kind of studies, and so this is one of them. So again, from the federal side, it's not a one-off. Hopefully we'll decide it to solve your needs. But the idea here is that this has replicability potential nationwide.
I have a question. This is Bob. I'm digging back into the stimulus package many years ago, and Alaska was fundamentally shut out of the electricity reliability and energy security because we could not generate enough power to qualify nationwide. Are there any power restrictions on this on the studies coming forward?
So I can't speak to any of the policy of that era or now for that matter, but what I can tell you is that a driver for this project is different than what it was during that Recovery Act, and there is actually an advantage to the current situation in Alaska in the sense that the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy are collaborating on projects that specifically address kind of, you know, have a defense connection. And so this is a very good example of that. There are only a few other ports in the nation that the Department of Defense considers to be highly integrated into their operations. I think there's 18 others, I think if I remember correctly, Jim.
17.
And so this is one. Though. Yeah, and so the other thing is that it happens to be a really good example because it also supports critical civilian infrastructure of the city and the region. And so you have several things going on for you. The other thing is that it's not a project that has been sort of pushed from anybody. It's really something that came up through concerns and discussions among the stakeholders locally. And so because it works for you, it's already, we've already gone halfway through the long walk that it takes to get some of these projects done. So various features means that, yeah, this project likely will meet with some willing partners on the federal side. And so there's some good opportunities here.
Thank you.
And by opportunities, I mean possibly funding to some extent, maybe not the whole cost, but a significant portion of the cost. Might be federal.
Is there existing grants then out there that we're applying for with this? Or would be?
There is existing money. Nothing that we're applying for yet. We're not quite to that point in our...
Yeah, can I get an understanding of it?
Right.
That's exactly part of the reason for a study like this, is if you're going to apply for a grant like that, you know, one of the questions that the grants will ask is, well, you know, what size are you talking about? What are the technologies? What would it look like? What have you done? And hopefully this is the kind of study that you would attach to those requests or quote and say, we've done some homework and, you know, here it is.
So what this really is this is the discussion that that will kick off those efforts.
Right.
And what we're going to have to do is get port users involved in it because they're going to be among the key beneficiaries.
Yeah. I'll take another 2 minutes to get through this. It's not very much. It gets into the weeds, but I promise I won't bore you to death. But the next slide here, which should be labeled number 7,
primary study findings.
Preliminary.
Yeah,
this is it
in a nutshell. We've looked at the key environment in which a system like this would operate. It's a challenge, right? There's currently no provision, for instance, for a system that is part of the utility or connected to the utility to island on its own with parts of the utility-owned distribution system as part of that sort of, you know, resilient asset. So that in itself, right off the bat, presents a challenge that we have to be creative here. The default solution for increasing resilience is for every one of the port tenants here to have their own backup emergency gen sets. As you know, there are problems with those. There's a high maintenance cost. They typically are a challenge to make sure that they operate when they really are needed for various reasons. It's just not a very good, understood not to be a very good clean solution. So the idea would be that we would try to come up with a different approach. And that is a microgrid to take the place of these emergency gen sets and centralize the cost of maintenance and operation of those systems. And even better yet, the energy assets would be used and useful during blue sky conditions to provide all the benefits, like, for example, reducing peak load and other things that are of interest, as opposed to having all these assets sitting around just for a rainy day, you know, once every blue moon. And so, you know, we hope that there is a better value proposition there. There's other challenges, but just to cut to the chase here, we've done a bit of homework with help from most of you at the port in terms of sizing up, the system itself. I think it's going to be a little, you know, around 7 MVA is what we need for peak capacity. There's a minimum load of a little bit less than 2 MVA. So based on that, we can begin to you know, hit the sizes and things like that and cost. There is a critical assumption here that because of the adjacent nature of the J-Bear and some critical loads and their location on that side, there's an opportunity to bring them in as a partner and provide some critical support to a specific asset on that side of the fence. And that would open doors, as I said before, possibly for their interest and participation and this project on the DOD side. So that's good news. And they have been, that is on the J-Bear side, involved in some of this. They're interested enough to provide some information and so on. So this is, from what I can tell, a serious partnership. The idea here on the system configuration is that we will deploy a microgrid locally. You can see there some of the options to add PV at around 2 megawatts. There will be an energy storage associated with that. Plus some diesel gen sets, and possibly leveraging existing infrastructure that makes this project very interesting. For example, there may be the possibility to plug in, if you will, some of those railroad engines, diesel electric, into the system to increase endurance and even, you know, use some of the existing fuel storage in the facility to extend, again, the endurance of a microgrid for days and weeks if need be in the event of a catastrophic event. And so you can see how this, something like this is of high importance. I'm 1 minute, I promise, to go here. The next slide is a diagram to just show you what it would look like. Just to highlight, it's a system that would be deployed within the boundaries of the Port of Alaska. You can see there the components on the right-hand side, but also entails a backup feeder over to a nearby critical load. I already described that. We're talking about JBAG here. And so those are things that we need to discuss, okay, how that would work. The next two diagrams here show how the system might be configured. There's a baseline on slide 10 that would basically require the deployment of a essentially parallel distribution loop to what's already in place, and you will attach the microgrid to that. So all these new facilities are shown in red. The tenants that choose to participate in the microgrid, you know, to basically receive resilient power from both the microgrid and the utility in a more resilient manner, would subscribe and connect to it. So those are the ones shown in blue dots up above. Those that, for whatever reason, business reasons, decide to opt out, they'll still have the ability to connect to the utility using the utility system currently. And so so this is one option. Obviously, the problem with this is that you'll be duplicating costly infrastructure, but it's clean from the point of view that you can see how the blue sky and the resilient benefits of the microgrid will be delivered to the participants of this consortium of energy resilient, you know, participants here. You'll still have a connection to the utility as shown there in blue, and that will provide, of course, you know, day-to-day power, of course, minus what this microgrid can do to manage things like peak load and things like that. So this will be cleanest from an operational standpoint, but expensive in terms of the cost. The next one show, the next slide, which is my next to last basically, shows what you could do if the utility said, okay, we like what you're doing. How about we, the utility, own and operate this microgrid? We'll make an arrangement with the participants in the port to deliver the blue sky value of this microgrid, namely reduce the net, you know, peak load, depending on some sort of arrangement with the utility. Still has a connection to JBAR, as you can see there on the right-hand side in red, but that requires, you know, less complication from an electrical side, less cost, less facilities to be deployed, but more complication from sort of a utility agreement standpoint. And so that's kind of something that needs to be discussed as next step. Last slide, just, you know, enumerate some of the things that the study flagged as potential things to consider in the column of risks and challenges. One is obviously designing a system that is robust enough with respect to these major events. I talked about that before. The capabilities need to be matched to the load requirements. And the reason I flagged this is because we don't really have good meter data yet at a granular enough, and I'm talking about minute to minute, to be able to really say, you know, what the size of the energy storage, for example, needs to be. So that's a challenge that we need to address. There will be a cost to this project and potentially some cost recovery that needs to be looked at. As I mentioned before, this is not something that neatly fits within the utility kind of regulatory construct that's available, so we may have to approach the Public Utility Commission and see what they think about creative ways to make something like that work. Some of that has to do with the ownership model, whether you, the port folks, own this and come to an agreement yourselves, or whether the utility does it, it depends. Whether there's a third party, those are all good options. And so that's kind of where we are with this study. I'd like to say in conclusion here that the study report has been sort of drafted. We're currently in a sort of review session with the Department of Defense to, you know, to get their perspectives on how the JBAR portion is portrayed. I'm sure you're going to have the ability to take a look and comment yourself from the force perspective, and we look forward to those comments. Next steps will be up to everyone, including you, and we'll be working closely with Jim on that. But with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Jim.
So I guess that's our basic deal of we're moving forward with coming up with a resiliency plan. And I expect that we will be wanting to start talking with individual port users and energy users probably within the month or within weeks to just start reviewing the exact sorts of needs, the potential benefits to users, and the costs. And that way they can start deciding whether they want to opt in or out. The nice thing about this system, as Abraham said, is that it would have a day-to-day real-life use in terms of reducing the peak demands. I've heard from virtually every big power consumer on the port that they're getting killed right now by power costs because of their demand charges. And by implementing this sort of system, we could level out the overall port demand and reduce power costs considerably, and those savings are what could be used to help pay for this system.
Just to back up a little bit, this is basically an introduction to this resiliency plan, which was formulated due to the earthquake and other analysis.
The earthquake we've been talking about doing this for a while. The earthquake just added emphasis to the need.
Okay, I'm just curious what the impetus was of the...
Now, you remember, once upon a time, there was absolutely no backup power down here at all. If the MLNP single line you came in here failed, we had no power whatsoever. So baby steps, we got some generators and connections for generators, not to put us in a position where we can continue to operate in a power outage, but so that we could save the facility and get ships off the dock if they were in an oddball configuration and it was dangerous for them to stay. And then we went to the next step, is that MLNP put a redundant line down into here. So now there's more than one way to get power down here. If there's a line failure because of an accident or something. This is the next step. This is, how do we gain a little bit of independence so that we're not totally reliant on MLNP or Chugachera being here at all? Can we create a microgrid down here? And can we do it in collaboration with the base and with the users and be self-sustaining if we have to be? So we've grown up enough to be to that point, and this is the first step in data collection to find out if it's feasible or if now that we're bringing it up, are people really interested?
Okay, Bob first.
Yeah, as the first, and because of the past conversations I've had with NSTAR and others, consideration of alternative fuel sources down here as well, the LNG specifically.
Absolutely. No fuel source is off the table right now. Our initial thought was, because we have a fair amount of it around for endurance, something that's diesel would be good. We also have the benefit of having railroad engines in the neighborhood, if you will, that are contractually available. So in the event of a need, we could have a contract with the Alaska Railroad that says, okay, if the grid goes out, we need three engines to plug in, or whatever the specifics are. And the nice thing about that is you have these engines that are being maintained and tested all the time, and we're not maintaining a gen set just to sit there and look pretty most of the time.
Thank you.
And the idea is to get the port users and say, okay, this is your critical power need, work all that out, and then if they can collaborate, their portion will be based on their, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not unlike our security plan, mm-hmm. where, each facility here could have its own security plan, and we would be in compliance with Department of Homeland Security requirements. Or we could have one security plan for the whole port that everybody kicks in, and it's a better plan overall, and not everybody has to sit there and repeat the same work for their facility that all their neighbors are doing. We're looking at doing something similar to that, where we're going, okay, we're going to have one backup power system that will work for everybody. It will also have this benefit of helping us level loads and reduce overall power costs. And not every one of us has to have a power engineer on staff or be paying a consultant to do it, because we're going to do it with a nice centralized solution.
Okay. Anyone else?
Quick question, the driver of it is the DOD or is it?
No, it's us.
It's the port.
It's us. We're working in conjunction with DOD and DOE.
Okay, so that's where the idea starts.
Right.
Yeah, opportunity is knocking, Andy. So, you know, we'd be crazy to not bring them into the mix.
Hey,
got it. I guess, like I said, that was my question, is where's J-Bear on this continuum of
I can maybe answer a bit of that. So we have been in collaboration with some of the folks at DOD, Department of Defense, that are interested in this. They are reviewing the study for fitness into possible programs that they have to participate. So, for example, one of the programs they have is to be able to participate in projects that provide any benefits to the base but are not on base. So they could be, at the port, for instance, and if those projects provide things like maybe water or energy or resilience or something like that, you know, they could procure those on a sort of service-based basis. Okay, so that's one. The Department of Energy has some, you know, possibilities. In fact, there's a little bit set aside, not very much, but if there's a need to make the finances of the project work, so that it can be looked at as a demonstration, as an example for the nation. You know, maybe a portion of the project, a percentage of the project, could come from DOE as well. So I would say, the question, who's driving this? I'd say what you have is on the federal side, both DOE and DOD, trying to figure out what you need in order to make this thing work. Because, you know, there is an interest. It won't be for the whole thing, probably, but at least it could be substantial enough to make it a really nice value proposition, I think.
Anyone else?
Just one more.
Okay, carry on.
One more, Paul. So the cost recovery that is referenced there is basically port users not being on peak demand.
Yes.
That's the sole cost
recovery. Well, there are a couple of different cost recoveries. One, right away, by leveling demands, we can reduce power costs for everybody or for the users, because if they're not getting hit with demand charges for the spikes of, for instance, when every time Matson does a crane lift, they spike their power demand. By leveling that load out, we reduce their cost of power considerably. Second thing is, most of these port users already feel a need to have some sort of a resiliency system, backup generators or whatever, and by basically pooling our interest to have this resiliency, they won't have to maintain their own gen sets and all the expenses associated with that. They'll pay into our common group, just like we do with the port security plan.
Okay. What's the feeling of the users? Are they on board with this? Have you discussed it with them yet?
We've talked with some of the users. They're interested enough that we got basic power consumption information from them. But we haven't had enough. We're basically, what this presentation is it's the kickoff to now we're going to start real conversations with the users and see exactly how it would fit into their business plans.
If I could, Abraham, there's a couple of references in your diagrams to passive energy, like a solar powered farm. What's PV in that?
PV is solar.
Okay.
Photovoltaic.
But then it said solar as well, so I was all right. So how much of that is? I mean, is that
so that's
viable?
Based on the site that we, you know, that folks consider to be best for this study that was done, I think maybe a year and a half ago or so, or 2 years ago, that identified a possible site, and the size of that site allows for at least 2 megawatts of PV to be deployed there. So we think that's a good number. What that does is it gives the possibility for the system to store that power into batteries and deliver that in short bursts, if you will, during this crane operations to make the maximum possible impact to demand, so that that demand charge doesn't ratchet up. So the combination of storage and PV, I think, has a huge value from a blue sky conditions. And then the diesel genset will be there essentially in case of a rainy day when the utility just can't do it, or you want to, you know, lower your demand and do, you know, maybe use some diesel to do it. You have that option as well, and so that's basically how it would work, right? But the idea of having PV there is nice, hopefully to cover the great majority of the blue sky value without having to burn diesel.
When you mentioned, Abraham, this is Simon Leshetsky, when you mentioned, I saw flywheel, were you looking at potential for tidal power generation, perhaps, or not?
So we haven't looked at that. The reference to flywheel is that energy storage could be, there's different technologies. Flywheel is something that people in Alaska, you know, have some experience with. It's considered to be rather robust and you know, appropriate compared to maybe other technologies, but there's a range. Right now, I mean, you ask a really good question. We haven't really done a survey, you know, I don't know, of any other possible options. You mentioned tidal, there may be some other things, but you have to consider what's compatible and what's not. So, for instance, possibly wind works from an energy standpoint, but you don't want to do that because the Jay Bear Airport, you know, the base next door probably would not allow it, you know, based on radar interference and those kinds of things.
Yeah,
is something that might work for everybody based on compatibility.
Yeah. I was just thinking with 30 feet of tidal change every day, and it's like up to 6 knots, and we're right at the waterfront. I mean, it may be something to...
Yeah, but a number of organizations have looked at tidal in Upper Cook Inlet, and there are some real challenges here that range from the fact that we don't actually have water out there. We have liquid sandpaper. And the ice in it really makes tidal challenging in this particular part of Upper Cook Inlet. The solar worked out nicely in that we have land on the, I'll call it the Government Hill hillside,
mm-hmm.
that really is not compatible with a lot of other port uses. So this could be a highest and best use for that land. There's not a very big weight load on the land. It's not high. It's not going to interrupt the viewscapes of the hillside residents. So it could be a very compatible use for that land and a relatively inexpensive installation. One nice thing is that typically people look at solar up here in Alaska and go, well, the problem is your demand is exactly the opposite of your generation. You know, we use the most electricity in February and January when it's cold and dark, and we generate the most power in June and July when it's warm and light. Well, one nice thing about the port is we actually have greater power demand in the summertime. So our generation and our demand curves are more in line. You know, we have cement operations, for instance, mm-hmm. in the summer, and increased fuel operations, and a number of other things that raise our demand a bit in the summer.
And extremely long days, which is good for PV, of course.
And as far as the flywheel goes, think of a flywheel basically as a mechanical battery. They are using a flywheel down in Kodiak right now, and they installed it specifically to work with Matson's Crane because they literally have an islanded system in Kodiak. And between wind turbines, the flywheel, and the hydro system, they're basically going without diesel for months at a time because they use that flywheel to take the edge off of the demand spikes that go along with that crane.
Something occurred to me that's typical of these kinds of systems, if you're talking about energy. Energy is expensive, and these kinds of systems are also expensive. One way to start, and I just sort of wonder, Jim, if you look into that, is to really take a second look at whether or not the efficiency of the current operation at the site from two points of view. One is, you know, are we doing the best we can with respect to that efficiency day to day? But the other thing is, do we really need to operate everything with this particular system in the event of a, you know, when there's a need that the utilities are unavailable? Or can we get down to a different tier of study more in depth where we really get down to the core of what's really the most critical thing that we can do, what's the best bang for the buck, if you will, so that you can optimize the size of the system for what's needed. And so that's typically the story when these kinds of systems go. You look at the efficiency of the site as best you can. It's really an opportunity to look at the whole thing. Once you're done with all of this, you're better off not only from a resilience standing, but you're also better off from a kind of a energy efficiency, energy use, optimization standpoint. So it could be the catalyst for a broader, look at the whole thing. wanted to make that comment.
Yeah. And that's really where we're, as we start talking with users, we'll start drilling down into that.
Okay.
But that's basically what we just wanted to let you folks know that this is going on. We're making some progress on it, and we're about to start talking with users about it. So, you know, when you're hearing stories about this new power project, this is what it is.
You're meaning tenants more.
Tenant, correct. When I say port users, I'm talking the tenants, the mats, yeah, the codes, the AVIs, and the fuel companies.
Okay. All right. Before we move on, I'd like to have two gentlemen come in at 12:17. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yes, sir. I'm Lou Lansang, SDDC. I took over Amelia Point.
Welcome yes. back.
Thank you.
And I'm Justin Patterson. I'm just...
Welcome.
A worker bee.
So, Abraham, I think we're wrapped up with you if you want to log off.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the chat, and nice to meet you all virtually. I hope to meet you sometime soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. It is. Last question or comment. He had different references to the federal regulations and opportunities. If you could network that so that our delegation is aware that these would be areas to push.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's
stating the obvious, but
yeah,
still.
And I think that's a couple of steps down.
Right.
You know, as we have to know what it is we're selling before we go out and start selling. So yeah, we're in that early stage of figuring out exactly what it is we're putting together. And I will put this presentation up on the website.
Okay, thank you.
The thing that killed us in the stimulus was you had to have 3 gigawatts project before it qualified for any stimulus.
More than Alaska needs. Well, the nice thing is because this is a local infrastructure piece. And DOD is interested for two reasons. One, because the port being alive and well is necessary for DOD operations across Alaska. But then also because us being alive and well enables us to throw an extension cord over the fence and plug into J-Bear to give them some extra resiliency.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's move forward. Stuart.
So operations at the port are
So I assume there are no questions on my report.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought we were done. Sure.
Okay.
Didn't
have time for questions, but you wouldn't have.
Okay. Any questions for Sharon?
No.
Okay. Stuart, you're up.
So operations at the port are going very well. The ice and the weather out in the Gulf of Alaska is kind of wreaking havoc on barge traffic and ship traffic. But they're getting, you know, everything's coming along. We got a tanker in this morning. It's the Donald S. Trout. They brought in about 315,000 barrels of Jet A fuel for the airport. The tow ship's down to one ship. It's been down to one ship because they're converting the other one to LNG. And so they've been coming in once a week. And they'll be doing that for the next 3 weeks. Matson's picking up some of the slack from them, but it's going pretty well. We had a heat line trace break, and our sewer line to the stevedore buildings froze up. So we're going out to bid to repair that line. It's caused some problems, but we're getting along. I'm working on a 2020 dredge permit for the small boat launch. It expires on April 30th, and so I'm working with R&M Associates to renew the dredging permit. I just finished a rewrite of our facility security plan. We submitted that to the Coast Guard. You know, every 5 years we have to look at it, change names, addresses, any kind of new tenants that we have down here, like Pepperstar or Delta Western, we have to add them into our security plan. So the plan was submitted. The captain of the port has signed off and approved our security plan. So that's good for another 5 years. So we're really happy about that. I think I told you guys that Denali was a successful contractor for security. They've got that for another 5-year contract too. So security is taken care of for the next 5 years, and we're very pleased about that.
That's the transition from Goyon?
Yeah, that's correct.
Same company.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Name.
So we have a huge deployment coming up in March, between 10th and 18th of March. Can I tell them the name of the vessel?
Yes.
So the USNS Benavides is coming in. It's a Bob Hope class. It's 951 foot long, and they're going to be bringing in 1,600 plus pieces of equipment and vehicles and helicopters. So it's going to be quite a show. You know, we'll work with Lou and his crew to hopefully bring in that ship on a Wednesday, and then they'll have till Saturday to finish loading, you know. But, you know, the good thing is we've got to be confident, stevedore crew, North Star, that will, you know, will take care of everything. And then I'm assuming they're going to assemble the helicopters and fly them out?
Yes, that's the plan.
Okay. So
are these returning?
Yeah,
it's
a 4-5 redeployment.
Okay.
They're coming back from Florida, from a train, the big train. They're coming back.
Vacation.
So that's pretty much what I have right now.
Coming in March, you said?
March 10th through the 18th is the time frame. So
we'll see what happens with the ice.
Yeah.
The
original Bob Hope class ship that came up here got turned around in the ice because they couldn't keep the engines going.
The sea chests.
Long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had two anchors down. I was dragging in the ice trying to get the engine going again by Phillips A. So it may end up that ship ended up going south and didn't come back. They I don't know what they did. We told them to go to Valdez because it was too much ice. But it's just an issue for us if there is a lot of ice.
So you won't have your name on the board that month?
Yeah, I'll take
it. All right. Anything else, Stuart?
No.
Any questions for Stuart? Just quick, anything on the cruise ships, I guess, would be curiosity. You got more coming this year?
Yeah, 10.
10?
10.
No, 14.
Wow, nice.
Queen Elizabeth's coming back.
Twice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Maybe you can get lunch this time.
No, I don't want. Yeah. I don't want nothing to do with them.
I don't blame you.
But the royal family's broken up, so they're going to leave the lifeboats down.
There you go. Yeah. Leave it in Canada.
I thought Prince Rupert.
Cheryl, you're up.
All right. So, in your packet was a preliminary year-end report for 2019. I would say that the revenues are relatively solid for the operating pieces. You know, the cash and construction investment accounts, those are entries that get made in central finance. And I do know from a meeting earlier that they're not quite finished with all of their work for the year. So we potentially could even see additional earnings on our money in the bank. So, and to that end, you can see that, you know, we only budgeted $200,000 because we really have no idea from year to year what we're going to earn. And this year earning, you know, $1.3 million, it relatively could skew your operating perception of revenues. So Commissioner Pulaski and I had a conversation before the meeting, and we thought we would share our findings with you all. So we took out all earnings on all investments. And so to that end, it changed the 114% revenue to 104%. So we still earned 104% this year over what we budgeted. Now, we're pretty good at budgeting, right? That's because from year to year, the business stays the same. And, you know, based on your volume, you can get pretty close on that. So that's a good thing. But that being said, you know, we always try to hit the mark. And, you know, because the expenses are directly tied to what we earn. So for that section of the report, the revenues all are fairly within budget.
You're showing 123% on dockage. Is that volumes are up on what I'm assuming with some of the other POL values,
right?
Assuming it's tankers?
It is. So, and the tonnage report that's at the bottom of the report, you'll see that, again, 2019 was a banner year for tonnage. We had more petroleum that came across the dock through the pipeline than in years past. So that all adds to the revenue exceeding what we budgeted above in the revenue section. So you'll see that the bulk liquid, which is all of the petroleum, is 113% of what we budgeted. So those all...
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah. So we're happy. We were pleased that everything was, you know, relatively on track. In the expense area, I do know that all the payroll hasn't been posted, and all of the expenses for the year will be cut off on January 31st. So we have until January 31st to book 2019 expenses onto our report. So potentially the next revision that you see will be carrying some additional expenses. The legal services, for example, the $2.3 million that we have actually is all of the attorney fees through November. So we will have a December bill that will get posted. And the depreciation, again, is an estimate, and the actuals will be done the same with the IGC. So depreciation and IGCs are all done by Central Finance according to their schedule, and I do believe that that's on February 15th. So, you know, I'll keep track of everything and potentially provide, and I will provide you guys with a final report at the end of 2019, and then April 1st is the audit, so we'll have our financial audit report available after that. And I can take some questions on the expenses. I have one more thing I want to talk about, but does anyone have any questions on the expense section or anything else?
So you're saying the expenses will be finalized at the end of next
January,
end of this month.
Yep.
The revenue is already in,
correct?
Okay. That sounds good. And I guess any other questions?
No, the important point, can you pull that out, was for 4% more revenue than they budgeted for.
Yeah. And I guess
the construction.
The only other question I had was, how is SAP and how is that impacting?
So I would have to say that, you know, not to be, I don't really hate SAP. It was a long process, but, you know, functionally we have just incorporated it. And, you know, the ability to use that system as a paperless system is extremely cost saving. You know, the amount of paper that the staff had to copy and send and go through the mail compared to being able to attach a document, a PDF document, to a transaction that travels all the way through the system, it's just huge. I don't think that they really ever put a dollar amount on it, but I know for us, all of the project accounting work that we do, every transaction carries that specific invoice to support it, so when the auditors come, we don't have to make copies. They have access to it. I mean, it's just that piece of it has been huge for us. So not really, right? I think it's a cost savings. That would be my opinion. Probably not the same as everybody else's, but for what we do here, it's just been efficient for us.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Ignore the twitch.
And I wasn't paid to say that.
Follow on to the assembly meetings as you project the 2020. What do you see going on with the MESA?
So we have in our budget for this year, we're still paying the MESA on the revenue, but because that is a look back, right? So the revenue that we're going to pay on this year will be for 2019 in the MESA. So the 2020 MESA revenue portion is based on the 2019. And the general fund budget has already been set based on us paying that. So we'll pay that for 2020. In 2021 is when the regulation changed that we have an exemption for paying on the revenue due to the increase in the tariff fees that we're going to hopefully collect this year. So the revenue basis for 2021 will be exempt. We'll be exempt for that. So going forward for us, I think what our priority is, you know, with your marching instructions to basically come back each year and say whether you agree or don't agree with the tariff increases, we'll start right away in January, evaluating and looking each month comparatively, so that the process for you all will be an easy and clear path to when you need to get to the point of recommending what we do for 2021 or supporting your recommendation for the tarot. You'll have plenty of information and plenty of time to get those thoughts in your head. That's my goal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The issue of doing a look back was an important clarification for us versus it starting right off.
Right, it is.
So the storage is only 45% of the budgeted amount. Is that a bill that's coming in?
So the storage fees are potentially RUPs that Stuart will set throughout the year. So that's basically a reality of what we anticipate that we might have, that, but we might not always get exactly all the RUP revenue that we've anticipated. So it isn't really anything that's coming in yet, because all the RUPs are billed out for the year.
Anything else for Cheryl?
Good job through the year. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So like I said, you know, I will, through this process, come up with the report so that you guys will need to look at. So as we go through, just please let me know what you like, what you don't like, what information you need or not to make it a good process for you.
And I'd like to follow on my comment of complimenting. One of the concerns I had in going to the assembly working groups and that was the perception that we as a court commission were not getting the financial information that we've been receiving for the last 5 years. And that disconnect was very disconcerting in hearing from assembly members that we were making decisions without understanding the court's finances. So. What can you say? It's a perspective or perception. I'll leave it to that. Thank you, Greg.
Matters more to me if you say it.
Yes. It's a lot easier, safer for me to say it.
Okay. Modernization. Thank you. Modernization. Sharon, you back up.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. The South Floating Dock relocation, which must have been in last year, as you've already reported, was taken out of the Hewitt contract and deferred to this year. They'll be coming out with a separate invitation to bid for that. It's going to come out a little later than we thought because we're trying to accommodate the fire department who would like a davit to load some of their equipment onto and off of the South Floating Dock. So, but you'll still see that, I think, go out to bid here in first or second quarter.
You had noted a grant for that, for new floats?
We have a grant. We've made the decision to go ahead and put it out to bid with new floats. And if the grant is successful, that would be great. We'll apply against that. If not, well, and we're not actually hoping for the State Ports and Harbors grant, which, you know, it's been the last time we were successful was the work we did at the small boat launch. And, you know, with administrations and everything else going on, they have not been funding projects in general and Anchorage projects behind others around the state. So, but either way, we're going to go ahead and get new floats. We didn't seem really cost-effective trying to make those old ones keep working. So that's that one. And that's now the first, as you guys all know, the first phase of drawing cement terminal is under contract with Pacific Pile Marine. I think the work will begin April 20th. This is just for your scrapbooks or whatever. It's similar to what's already on the board. And it's the little reminder of what we've been doing to get up to this point. 2018 was the ground stabilization. 2019 was the transitional dredging and the south backland stabilization. And then this year, we'll be building that actual dock that you see on the wall.
You said March.
March 30th. Yeah. If we ran out of copies, I can make plenty more. So that's that's our big news. We are also, as we talked about a little while ago, the environmental permitting, of course, is the main milestone to cross before you actually can let a contractor enter that water. And our incidental harassment authorization was published in the Federal Register on December 30th. And the public comment period ends January 29th. And we expect the next day to get whatever. No comments have been posted publicly to the website, but we expect that, you know, there, you know, there's for sure some groups watching it, and we'll have some questions and comments. And bottom line is, we still feel, the agency feels confident they'll be able to issue that authorization by the time we need to start construction on March 30th, April 1st. We also, March 30th is kind of a magic day. Our build grant team will be coming to visit us. And interestingly enough, many of those people are the same people working on the CFIO loan evaluation items. And so we're looking forward to hosting that. They need to do a field visit to put eyes on the project and make sure it's really going to happen. And so that will be, you know, we're looking forward to that. Let's see. We'll also just, we'll also March 19th be making a presentation at the Government Hill Community Council meeting, you know, in a good neighbor way to explain what they can expect as the progress progresses. There's going to be a 1,000-ton crane here. It's going to be really cool if you're into cranes. So, it's called the Pacific Lifter. And, there'll be other cranes too, but it's going to be quite the event. We could probably sell tickets to a lot of the engineering societies around town for observations.
Fundraising.
Revenue source.
Build a big wall. So have to put knot holes in it to see what's going on.
Then the rest of the project, the second phase of the PCT, will be out for bid. You'll actually see in the next few weeks, we're calling in an advance notice that's going to be published in constructive publications and whatnot. It's a request for interest. It'll describe the basics of the project and request contractors who believe they'll be interested in doing it, are in bidding on it, to let us know and give us advance notice of their qualifications. Kind of just a gauge to see if, you know, who's really watching for this and how many bids we may, you know, be looking for. I think we're also requesting, if they see issues with the schedule or something, are willing to offer comments, we're happy to hear them. So it's could get no response, could get interesting response. So it's just something a step we feel we need to take. Remind the industry this project's coming out, and so that the specialty or the major contractors that do this kind of work are keeping it on their radar. So
when will that go out?
Probably within a week or two. Could be, we just finalized the wording of it like this morning, so they'll publish it this week maybe, and then start having some, within that publication will be a notice of some on-site meetings, or just, it's not a bid, they won't have the drawings, but it's just, here's what's going on, here's the basis of the project, and then, invitation bid will be coming out in the next few months. So we're looking to have that out for bid in second quarter, and similar timing to the Pacific File Marine Award in early summer, so they can get the long lead items coming and be under contract so they can build next year. Meanwhile, for people who are following the assembly agenda, this next meeting, for introduction, the finance group will be requesting permission from the assembly to authorize commercial financing borrowing so that we can fill the gap of dollars that we don't have in hand right now based on the new tariffs, providing us the debt service revenue to cover that. So that'll be coming up. Introduced this next Tuesday, and then for action, public hearing 2 weeks later. So that's heads up on that. And finally, I should talk a little bit about the bill grant, the TIFIA loan. I already mentioned folks are coming up. We're working with them for all the information they need to actually release money or to finalize the grant award. It's a reimbursable grant, so they give us money as we spend it. We say, okay, we've done this. But we can't do any of that until they finish their NEPA, Environmental Protection Review, make sure that, they're funding the project environmentally responsible, all those kinds of things. And then the Tiffy alone, we continue working with those folks. We had a good call with them on January 10th, and you know, we sent the letter of interest, letter to the funder. When you screen it all out, it was just sick. They had about 6 or 8 weeks to review it, that whole team. And we had a good call with them, and they emphasized that there were no red flags to what they saw in the letter of interest. And the next thing they said was, however, we couldn't close a loan until we've done our environmental review. So it's becoming quite the standard. That's how it is. None of the agencies are allowed to raise money. That loan could actually take up to a year to close. Could be sooner, but we want to be realistic. And by the time, now that we know there's no red flag, it's a matter of proving credit worthiness and the environmental piece of it. So, again, the same people on the bill grant, the exact same people, human beings, are filling dual roles, both in TIFIA type reviews and the bill grant review. So that's good, because they'll be educated both ways. And then finally, reprogramming conversations are underway on a more affordable replacement scenario for the cargo facilities. We had our kickoff to that effort last Friday with this focus, of course, is on the cargo facilities, but there isn't a fueling business aspect to it in terms of some kind of secondary fueling. So that when POL1 and POL2 are no longer able to be in service, that we'll have some kind of additional fuel transfer capability, or petroleum transfer capability, I should say, on the cargo docks. So that's part of the conversation. But the focus at this point in the conversations are how do we meet Toads and Matson's needs. And this was mostly kind of like the things going on in D.C. right now. Talking about the rules and what the plan is and how we're going to go forward. The difference, and I'm sure Steve will want to add to this in his remarks, is that it's none of us want to relive what we call the PCT experience in terms of lack of team feeling between the port users, the primary users, and keep in mind the public is the user of the port, but the primary business users of the port, and the project team, the port team, port staff, is that this is a team problem, and we need everybody on the team to solve it. The Madison and Tote have been great to work with, and they're spending quite a bit of their own money on their own engineers to bring the perspective, because we have engineering input from them versus just business input. You know, okay, here's our engineering problem associated with how we do our operations. How do we make this all work with that? So it's a nice atmosphere to start with. We're in the honeymoon phase again, but we hope to prolong it. And we'll be having a secondary, more meat and potatoes technical discussion in probably a couple of months. We don't, the first real shrift. So that'll be coming up. Any questions? Yes, sir?
Yeah.
Real
simple. It's not a question. It's a request. When you meet with the TIFIA group, as if the subject of tariff is going to come up in it, will you invite the members of the Port Commission?
Of course. Which tariff? The port tariff or the foreign tariffs?
Whichever area that is within our.
Okay. Absolutely.
And I'm just stating the obvious because I knew you were, but I think it's important that they see that the Port Commission wants to make sure that the loan can be funded as well through revenues. It's part of a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Any other questions?
I'm going to have a good report.
Yeah, well, it's very okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim, you're up.
I will be very brief since I've already eaten up a bunch of the meeting. Main thing that we're working on with external affairs right now is we're moving forward with a program to try to get some state funding to support the port modernization program. You may have seen some references to a new website, SaveThePortSaveAlaska.com. We're starting to show up in some ads, and it will become increasingly visible. SaveThePortSaveAlaska.com, or that campaign is basically a three-phase campaign. Phase one is to drive legislative support to get funding for the port modernization program, probably from a general obligation bond or as part of a general obligation bond. In about a week and a half, I start my speaking tour, and Steve's going to be taking some of this speaking tour where we'll be up in Fairbanks, we'll be in the Valley. I'm working on getting down to the Kenai Peninsula. We'll be in Juneau talking about the port modernization program and where it's going and the funding needs. After we get through the legislature, the campaign will roll over and start generating support to make sure the administration signs whatever gets through the legislature in terms of a funding. And assuming it's a general obligation bond, that means it's going to have to go to a public vote. So the campaign would then roll over into a public campaign to support the vote. So it's basically a campaign that's designed to evolve as the funding process progresses. And I think I'm done.
Okay. Questions for Jim? Old business.
There is no old business. No unfinished business that you guys have to worry about.
Good. New business.
The only item on that list is I know we dabbled and did unofficially at the last court commission meeting about nominees for the chair and vice chair positions. It's that time of year. So you may want to take this opportunity to formally do nominations for chair and vice chair, and we'll put that as a item, a new business item for voting at the next commission meeting. So this is just the memory jogger that it's that time of year again.
And when does it do? When is the term up?
It's a 2-year term. We're coming up on it. I wish I had the date right off the top of my head. Sadly, I don't.
There are no term limits, are there?
Term limits, yeah. There you go.
I think it's tolerance limits.
Yeah, tolerance level.
Tolerance and lifetime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, would the current chair and vice chair entertain staying?
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
Very good.
Second.
Same thing. You don't have to pre-print those.
Okay, any other discussions on that? Anyone else interested?
Well, do we need a nomination? What are you asking him for? You're the chair.
No, he just nominated.
Yeah, okay. So, but Steve's talking about voting on it next meeting. I don't know why we put anything off to the next meeting.
Yeah,
we might as well just do it now.
Exactly.
That's why I thought we'd
Mr. Chairman, I nominate Brad and Bob for chair and vice chair.
Well, you can do one at a time. I don't think you can do two at a time.
I'll nominate Bob.
Second.
Bob is vice chair.
Vote.
Aye.
Aye. I nominate Brad as chair.
Second.
Epstein.
Aye. 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 Aye.
Congratulations.
Okay. Good job, guys.
Okay.
Look at all the campaign money you saved.
Yeah. Right.
Jim's got enough.
TV ads in prime time are getting expensive, so it's
okay. Super Bowl. Public comments. We'll start this way and work our way around. Okay. Anybody over here have comments?
Bart, anything?
Eugene.
You want to go ahead, please?
Go ahead, Eugene.
Okay. My name is Eugene Calhoun. I've been a resident for over 42 years, approximately 20 of those years a resident of Anchorage and currently a resident of the City Valley. I would have to repeat some of the things I'm about to say if it was you were in compliance. The agenda for this meeting, yes, it was on the newly posted notice site, the agenda. Not the packet information, not financials, nothing else, but it was there. On the port site, the only agenda that I see that was most recent is the November 1. So this is a continued issue of concern. You had a major presentation here with respect. There should have been hard copies available here for that, and it should have been posted as part of a packet. People know that item of that presentation wasn't part of the agenda. It wasn't added as a vote or anything, so the public was blinded to what that presentation came about. The word stakeholder came to mind. I keep on hearing that more frequently, but very rarely out of the valley. Stakeholder means you're basically saying that certain people are invited and others are not. The word's public. The public meeting, public notice, and when you had a major presentation for the half a dozen times where the party made the word stakeholder, even one of the sheets had the word stakeholder, that concerns me. You're, by the way, I like to reference this word as, this is the Port of Alaska. It's not a stakeholder group. It's Port of Alaska. You need to bring out, if you're looking, you and the municipality is looking to find out how it's going to be paid to rebuild this port, to bring it up to more appropriate standards, and there's a lot of money needed. The end result is you need to do an outreach and include the public and not exclude the public. And with 59 seconds to spare, I should just start out with the first thing. The port website, the tariff, go on that page right now, effective January 1st, 2019. That stood out. It should be January 1st, 2020. When you open the document, it shows out on the cover, but who's ever reading on that prominent, interested issue, it says January 1st, 2019.
Okay.
That needs to be corrected. And then the last thing to point out is when it went before the assembly, there were two people that testified. I was one of the only two. One other party here testified on it and raised concern of openness, transparency, and all that. I guess I'm the only one that basically is challenging the process and is continuing to do what's being done. And then just close this, and this has reference to the board, it has reference to the whole state and the community. The Anchorage is engaged with moving into different, bringing up taxes. There was a meeting on that issue, options, vendor, sales tax, a whole lot of things. The process has been a total sham. And a line from the mayor at a town hall meeting where the bulk of the comments were not the public, but the chief of staff was this, municipality of Anchorage is well managed throughout its history. And I replied at the assembly meeting to that those words of the mayor and saying fake news. Thank you. I appreciate Jim just close making a request to have people speak, identify them before. Thank you, but some did and many did not. Thank you.
Jim, any comments on the posting on the website?
Clearly, we had a typo made when my web person posted the 2020 dates. We'll fix that. We did have an issue where our web server went down, which is why we didn't get the agenda up onto it. But it was posted on the Muni website, which is why I wasn't super concerned about it, because of the fact that it was already on the official public notice place. With regards to the presentation that we just saw, it literally cleared Department of Defense about 10 minutes before this meeting started. I've been trying to get it from them for several days, and DOD had to say, yeah, it's okay to publicize this beforehand, and that's why I did not have it posted. We weren't certain that meeting was actually going to happen or this presentation was going to happen until I had DOD's clearance.
Yeah. And I think we were all new to it, so it was just a really
just one short remark. I noticed the brief. The minutes that were approved today were August. I'm concerned the fact that when you have a meeting, you approve the previous meeting and you're missing a couple of meetings, and that becomes really old news, and that's not good. And that in that situation, I want to respectfully say this. When the resolution of this body who were present to prove that the resolution for the assembly on the tariff, that those minutes were not available until the next meeting. We're talking about old stuff, and that creates people in dark about what you're doing with the board meetings. Thank you for the time.
And we understand that we have an administrative backlog in some of the minutes. It's part of why we've taken to recording and posting the recorded meeting, so that even if you don't have a written document, at a minimum by this afternoon or tomorrow morning, there will be an audio version of this that anybody can listen to.
Is that accessible online?
Yes, it's accessible online. We started doing that 3 meetings ago, I think.
That's fine.
Okay. So we've been making a real effort to get that done.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Eugene. Anybody else? Tom, do you have a comment? Okay, court director.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I have nothing valuable to add.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Took the words from my round the horn out of my mouth. No.
Okay, commissioners round the horn. Simon?
Nothing.
Andy?
Just, is there an update on the legal case?
Just that the little mini trial is going to be held in San Francisco next month.
Oh, I thought it was in November.
No, so did we, yeah. But that was a mistake. So it's in February. Probably by the time we get together again, there may be something to say if the judge has made a ruling after it's over.
Got it. Thank you.
Actually, in Steve's defense, it wasn't a mistake. We were originally told it was November. It somehow evolved.
Okay.
Ron?
Just would say, it's ice season. It presents challenges for everybody, especially us moving the ship. So, and as the construction, looking past ice season, I'd like to look beyond it right now. This summer, during construction, please have Pacific Pile get to us before they start putting buoys out there and involving, infrastructure in the approaches to the existing facility so that we can work with it and have an idea.
We can get that their work plan to you.
Mm-hmm.
See, we have coordinated with the Corps, and we have moved some of the buoys out from where they wanted them originally, and the Canoe can't put them there, so I think everyone's pretty aware of that, especially with the tanker incident last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that, but we can also make that work plan available.
Well, we want to make sure we have the right contact information. Who do we speak to, and make sure that they update us, it's not just going to be tankers. There's going to be cruise ships and all the other players. Right. We'd like to see it proceed smoothly.
Do you think if we had, if we let you know in the kickoff meeting, we're having biweekly meetings with the contractor now, but they're based on some middle and things like that. When it's the I got her ready to start work meeting with.
When you get into the nuts and bolts, sure. Yeah. Reach out to us and so we'll make sure somebody's there.
We should have Cook Inlet there too, because they're going to be the ones that are going to get the call. Aves. Nothing?
No. Yeah, I'll be in Juneau February 10th to the 13th, carrying three items. One is Pioneer Homes, because I sit on their board. Second, I want to talk about the GEO bond and the support for the Port of Alaska. And if you have specific senators and representatives that you'd like to share your message through me, please don't hesitate. And third, I'll be, because I have a public seat on the Oil and Gas Competitiveness Review Board, I'll be talking to them about oil and gas competitiveness. I think two of those three will get me through the doors of almost everybody. So, and I'm a person who does at least 10 meetings a day in June, so it's a non-issue.
We will talk.
Okay. All right. Nothing from the chair. Unless there's anything else?
Well, we have just had another meeting.
Congratulations to the new officers.
Maybe you would have received that one.
Meet the new boss, the old boss.
Yeah. Schedule. Next schedule. Let's see.
I won't be there. No. Yeah. I'm pretty damn close to that.
March 19th? What?
No, it's a Wednesday. It's going to be the 18th, right?
18th.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm in Florida.
18th? When are you in Florida?
I come out of Florida on the 20th.
Okay.
Let me double check.
Do we have anything coming up through the legislature or assembly or anything we would want to review?
No, nothing that requires you guys to make some kind of a official decision.
Yeah, I could do the 11th or the 25th.
References around the room.
You love it.
11?
Yeah.
I
11.
11? Okay. Okay, March 11.
Thank you, guys.
Sounds like something happened in March on the mobilization. Bob Hope. Sure.
Yeah, he can check the ice out there.
311.
We thought you were leaving.
Right, March 11.
All right, with that,
right.
We are adjourned. All right.